Every band that becomes a name band, a band that graduates into a headliner, with the ability to tour beyond their own backyard, have experienced a period where they were what is known as a buzz band. The hottest, the coolest, the band on the scene everyone wants a piece of. Now, if they can ride the wave of tastemaker cool and be resilient enough to withstand the inevitable backlash that always follows this period, then the band can slowly but surely grow into a highly revered act. And this is what Sepultura has become, a very reliable, tenured wellspring of crushing heavy metal. But to understand the Sepultura phenomenon and their beloved longevity, one must remember those early years when the band were only starting to become a known entity in North America. I became aware of them by reading all the metal magazines who proclaimed them the second coming of Metallica and Slayer combined. What made them even more special was that they were from faraway Brazil, not exactly the place known for churning out explosive metallic fury at the time. Of course, the path that Sepultura blazed has since laid the groundwork for some incredible heavy Brazilian music like Christian, Angra, and Ratz de Porra. But it should be noted that I have yet to see a buzz on a band in the metal scene that even comes close to the fever that Sepultura garnered when they broke. The excitement was palatable, and when they finally hit my ears with their third album, Beneath the Remains, I was hooked almost by the second note. Even to this day, I rank Beneath the Remains as one of the greatest metal albums ever released. But what permanently indentured the band to my psyche came on the eve of my 18th birthday, when I went to see Sepultura play in Toronto. It was a momentous occasion. To me, this was a rite of passage into adulthood, and I couldn't think of a better band to spend it with than Sepultura. As the band hit the stage, the clock struck 12, and I sailed into adulthood just as Max Cavalera yelled out, "Toronto! Destroy!" During the 90s, my interest in metal as a whole waned. I wasn't alone in this. A lot of metal bands released albums that sounded more like hard rock than anything metal. Surely, a reaction to the grunge fallout that we've discussed before on this podcast. Check out episode number 20 with Sam Dunn. But through it all, and to their credit, Sepultura never wavered. In fact, they arguably released even stronger albums like Chaos AD and Roots, almost buoyed by the spurn. In 2003, we were booked on a Jack Daniels-sponsored tour that had Electric Eel Shock, Flaming Sideburns, Our Band, and, you guessed it, Sepultura as headliner. I was very excited to not only reconnect with a band that played a huge part in my fandom for heavy music, but to go on tour with them? It was a distinct honor. Of course, the Sepultura of 2003 was now very different from the Sepultura of Beneath the Remains, Chaos AD, and Roots. Namely, founding lead singer-guitarist Max Cavalera had left, only to be replaced with Cleveland native Derek Green. The whole metal community was skeptical that someone, anyone, could fill the vacancy left by Max. But nobody banked on Green meeting the challenge head-on and filling the big shoes needed to not only take over from Max, but become his prized successor. Now with 7 albums under his belt with Sepultura, albums like Dante 21, Alex, and their newest album with a very long name, The Mediator Between Head and Hands Must Be the Heart, all of them, all the albums, all joust for top spot in the Sepultura discography. It's easy to hear, Derek Green is a metallic machine. It was on this 2003 Jack Daniels tour that I was given a radio show on Rocket FM in Stockholm, the rock home of Stockholm, and one of my first features was what I dubbed the Singer's Clinic, where I would talk to other singers in other bands about singing techniques, etc., etc. Derek was my very first guest, and since I've been doing this podcast, I've always wanted to have him back on. A few weeks ago, we were both playing the Metal Hammer Paradise Festival in Germany, So it seemed appropriate that we meet, catch up, reminisce, and see where it takes us. I must make mention that this was the morning after the Paris attacks. It was very fresh in everyone's mind. Derek and I discussed the previous night's events, but since not all the news from Paris had filtered over just yet, and we were still somewhat in the dark about the whole thing, we both decided that it would be best to leave discussions about Paris off the podcast, especially since I record episodes weeks in advance, and anything we discuss would be old news or maybe even incorrect by the time we uploaded our talk together. Also, I wanted to make mention here that Sammy Siegler gets brought up, and at the time I couldn't remember the name of the band Sammy was in when we toured with them back in 2005. Well, that band was Nightmare of You from Long Island, New York. And how you doing, Sammy, if you're out there listening? Thanks to everyone who has taken time to tweet that they listened to the podcast or left a rating or a review on iTunes. I really appreciate it. Thanks to Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones for supporting the podcast. Thanks to Chino Loco's Restaurants for making fish burritos stuffed with chow mein noodles. I hope you dig this episode. It's with one of the nicest guys you'll meet, with one of the heaviest voices in metal. Derek Green from Sepultura is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. They play the Guinness Danko's go out down for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes take me in from fucked up. Stop playing, hang down, down. What do you see in my future? What do you reading in bones? She paused for a while, flashed an alligator smile, and she told me Danko Jones.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready because the Danko Jones podcast starts. No, no, no.
Hey, Derek, how you doing, man?
Good.
You have the distinction in my head, in my mind, of being the very first person that I did this kind of thing with, because way back in 03, when we were touring together in Germany, you were my first guest on my radio show.
Right.
So the Singer's Clinic, you were the first singer that I spoke to.
I remember that. So I
every time I think of Derek Green, I don't think of Sepultura. I think of like the first guest on my radio show.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I was really looking forward, and you know, from the messages and emails that I've been trying to get you on this podcast. And, you know, not to pick up where we left off in 2003, but we did this whole tour, and, you know, I'd known about you from, I think it was the Roarback album.
Mm-hmm.
So for up until then, that's all I'd known of you.
Right.
And the last show, we had this kind of after tour party in some sort of communal room in the venue. And I walked in the room with a Youth of Today shirt.
Right.
And then you were like, Youth of Today, what the fuck? And I was like, no, fuck, I didn't know this about you. So you've got some serious hardcore roots.
No, absolutely. I mean, some of the first shows, I mean, that I went to were hardcore shows. I started going to shows. I think one of the first shows I went to was maybe David Lee Roth when he just left and, you know, his solo. And it was like, who was playing guitar?
Steve Vai.
And it was amazing. And I think Rat maybe even opened up. And I mean, as a kid, I was like, this is incredible. But really going to my first hardcore show really changed my whole life, because I knew then, I was like, okay, I definitely want to do this style of music. One of the first shows I saw was Cro-Mags and Age of Quarrel tour, their first album. And it was intense. You know, I'd never seen anything like it. As far as the reaction of the crowd, the control that they had over, as far as the communication they had between the audience, was something I'd never seen before. And so this fascinated me, you know, and the fact that they were straight, at least part of them were, and they were vegetarians, I thought that was just like even more intriguing. And they had books at their shows, and I was just like, my God, there's so many books here. It's like, this is something, you know, like a nerd haven, you know. I was like, this is amazing, you know. And I really got into it. And
they also looked tough.
They were tough. I mean, they were really badasses, you know. I was like, that was, I mean, all those aspects were so appealing to me. I mean, they were just like tight on stage, you know, confident, you know, really tough. Like the lyrics were about living on the streets, their day-to-day life, you know, was believable. And it just hit really, really hard. And they were had topics they were writing about that were really serious. I was 14, you know. It's just like, wow. You know, they really made me look at the world in a different way. And then my parents never drank at home, never smoked or anything like that. So for me in my house, we never had alcohol or anything like that in the holidays or any time. And there were a lot of kids in my school getting completely wasted all the time. Their parents had huge liquor cabinets and they'd have big parties and everyone getting wasted. But I loved going to shows. I loved skating. And I really wasn't into that scene of getting screwed up or fucked up. So I really gravitated towards that straight edge scene. And also became friends with those guys at the same time that it was really popular to me. I mean, this was in the mid-80s. These bands were passing through Cleveland. And it just really connected with all these friends. And I'm still friends with all those guys from, like, New York and those different bands. And it's great to see them now and just have those fond memories, you know. But it really was something significant to me, you know, at the time as far as just, you know, I wasn't really like putting X's in my hands and things like that, but I was really into the idea of it, you know, and the energy behind that scene was something that was really, again, very honest, very in your face, just a lot of attitude, you know. It was something I wasn't used to seeing at shows, and it was different from that whole preconception of what people had of heavy music.
Yeah, another thing about the Cro-Mags that hit me as well is that they were Krishna.
Yeah.
And that was a new thing in music that I'd never even heard bands doing.
Absolutely.
And also back then, like mid-80s, like you're saying, they had more tattoos than some people have now.
Right. So. No, absolutely. I mean, that was definitely something I was really intrigued by, the fact that they were into the Krishna religion. And I, like I said, I bought those books and I was reading about it. I became really intrigued about the religion and the vegetarianism, you know, was all connected. And once I moved to New York, it was just coincidence. I became friends with John Joseph, like really good friends. So we're just like hanging out, you know, listening to him talk about, you know, like stuff from back in the day or just how shit was and how shit is and just his philosophy, you know. And I was working in bars and stuff like that, working the door, and he's just like, it's just really incredible that I became really good friends with him. And, you know, inviting me for like Christmas or Thanksgiving dinners and him preparing the dinners, you know. He's like an excellent cook. He's an incredible cook because he would be cooking at the temple for giving out food to people in the park. So, you know, it was just like, you know, I just never imagined myself like being in that position, you know, as far as being friends with him and just being introduced to a whole different world of, you know, just moving to New York and really kind of figuring out the scene. And it was great, you know. We're still friends and he's still, you know, hardcore as ever, you know.
Have you read his book, Meat is for Pussies?
Yes. Actually, while he was writing it and a few books that he's written, you know, he'd always give me and another friend some notes to check out and stuff. And it was like really, really, really intense, you know, especially his growing up. A lot of stuff, I mean, we talked about, but there was stuff in the book that I never talked about, you know. It's just really interesting to hear, you know, and read all that stuff.
JC and our band, our bass player, he's a huge John Joseph fan. Mm-hmm. He's read the book. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, he'll come in and go, yeah, John Joseph just liked my Twitter, favorited my Twitter, you know, like, it's like on that level.
And I saw, I follow John Joseph too on Twitter and Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And he recently posted this pic, How to Turn Vegan in 4.5 Hours. You watch these 3 documentaries.
Mm.
I haven't watched it yet.
Right, right.
Because I'm too scared to.
Yeah. It's just like, now I know, like the truth. And
yeah. But are you still vegetarian?
I'm still vegetarian, yeah. And I think I'm probably... eventually like make that move to vegan again, because I was a vegan at one time, and especially the time when I was hanging out with him. And I honestly never felt better in my life. I can't really lie about that, you know. Really? It was really it really had an impact, you know, as far as physically and mentally. It really affected me in those ways extremely. But we'll see. You know, it's like I've always been a vegetarian since I was 14, 15, and I definitely always...
Before hardcore or because of hardcore?
Well, I think it was a mixture of both. I mean, I was reading in school The Jungle by Upton Sinclair, and that was about the whole meat industry that was happening in the Industrial Revolution. And I think it was an impact of those friends and going to shows all happened at the same time. It's like, you know what? I'm going to try this. This is something I've never tried, this lifestyle, this way of eating. I've always thought in one direction because I was taught that way. And I wanted to step outside and see, is there really a difference, you know, when you do this? And I did it, you know, like as a, just to see, because I loved meat. When I eat meat, I mean, it was just like every day, you know, it's just like, I will die if I do not have a source of meat. I was that type of meat lover, and you know, I was like ribs, you know, on the weekend, you know, or you know, my parents were just, you know, my father grew up in the South, and so he was also a cook, and so it was kind of shocking, I think, to them. Yeah, not so shocking, but they were just like, okay, like, you know, we'll make this without meat, you know. But I mean, after a few months, I really got used to it. It really was kind of like a detox. I started craving it, you know, I'd smell it, my mouth would start to water. You know, I was really conditioned to eat meat, and it was really, a lot of the stuff that the meat I was eating was not very good, but it was, you know, meat that I was getting in a supermarket. I just didn't know any better, you know, and that was the whole thing. I just didn't know. And so eventually, once my body got rid of all that, then the craving and everything really stopped. And yeah.
You don't feel it, like, for example, catering today, if they're going to whip up some crazy, you're not, do you have those pangs still?
No, not at all. Honestly, I don't. I mean, just because I know a little bit more about where it's coming from, and it's gotten worse since, yeah. I mean, the industry, it's just, like, ridiculous. Now it's just, God knows what they're doing to it. Or actually, they do know what they're doing to it, but I definitely don't feel that way at all. I mean, before I was, like, really, like, that would be nice, but I forgot, you know, the taste, you know, everything about it. I mean, it was really, I've been, you know, a vegetarian longer than I have a meat eater. And so right. I kind of, you know, so it's, you know, those things fade, you know, your memory and things like that can fade as well. You know, they change, you know, necessarily fade, but you have a different perception of what it was. And that's what I have now.
Well, listen, like, I mean, you know, hanging out with, you know, hardcore guys who are vegetarian and vegan.
Made it easier.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, you know, I'm a meat eater.
Right.
And I've had passing thoughts of going vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you got, not to take away from your strength and your tenacity, but wouldn't you say hanging out with the coolest fucking vegetarian, John Joseph, did help you? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean,
whatever John would say, I do.
I mean, I was already a vegetarian before I met him.
Right.
And when I started living in New York, I mean, I was just being introduced to a whole nother world of, like, you know, the juices and the, you know, he's really into juicing and the machine that's juicing it and the whole workout, you know, I was doing, it was like really training a lot. And then when I look at, like, and remember how I was feeling and look at, like, damn, like, people are just like, wow, like, what are you on? It's just like, I'm on life, man. I'm on life. You know, like, it was so pumped up. Like, and I would look around, I just, it was like a weird, because I worked in the night and I also worked in the day. I had two jobs. I worked for Russell Simmons at Fat Farm, and as a it was crazy. As assistant manager at his clothing store in Soho, and I worked at a no-till motel, like a dirty like dive bar in the East Village. And I would just see people like zombies at the end of the night, you know? Yeah. And I was just like, wow, this is, people are just like living in this complete illusion. And I was just like, I don't want to be there, you know? I don't want to be that walking dead, you know? But, I mean, I was never into preaching to other people.
Yeah, same here.
And I think people need to make that decision on their own. For me, I found that there are a lot of people become really aggressive towards me because I am a vegetarian, which I thought was kind of funny. You know, like, why don't you eat meat? Like, what's wrong with you? You know, and getting attacked. I'm like, hey, man, I don't criticize anything that you're eating or what you're going to eat, you know, so just give me the respect that, you know, I need to do what I love to do.
That's an interesting reaction because
when people find out that I don't drink, I don't call myself straight edge.
Right.
I've broken edge over the years, you know, but I come back. I don't know if I'm allowed back in the fold after you break edge.
Yes, you are.
But, you know, when people find out I don't drink or do drugs, they're like, they go, I respect that. I respect that. And I feel like telling them, like, there was no hurdle I had to jump over.
Right.
It was so easy to do it. Right. Like, I feel like you're giving me more credit than right. I deserve, you know. And that's an interesting reaction. But meat and food is... there's nothing toxic about, you know, going vegetarian or, you know what I mean?
But it's an
interesting reaction.
But I get it a lot. Like, people just really get like, you know, what does this guy think he is? You know, like, what is he trying to prove? You know, and I don't know, all of a sudden they become really knowledgeable in their meat eating ways. I'm like, dude, I was like, come on, let's not go there. If we get into a whole discussion about it, trust me, I was like, I will destroy you in a battle of whatever knowledge you have about meat eating, because I didn't know anything when I did eat meat. And that was something that I can admit, like, how much protein do you need in a day? And I was like, I don't know. Most people don't know. You know, it's because it's, I mean, it's just like all those different things. I don't want to get in an argument about what I eat. You know, it's my body, and I'm not going to sit there and watch people at McDonald's and be like, you're destroying your bodies. You know, like, stop it.
I'm sitting there with
put that burger down.
Sitting there with Big Mac going, is that
dairy? Megaphone, you know, but yeah, it's strange.
Well, I'm in a band with two guys who are like super healthy, super fitness. I mean, I don't live crazy, but they make me feel like I'm fucking David Lee Roth, and I'm living, you know, like, just because I ate a hamburger yesterday, I feel like I'm like, you know, like Alice Cooper circa 74 or something, you know.
Well, I'll tell you something. I mean, it's difficult because when you're hitting on those points of what people eat, you know, it's their livelihood, you know, and food, you know, and I mean, it's hard for people to change that. It's almost impossible to get people to change it, especially as they get older. They're just set in their ways, and there's no turning back, unfortunately, for some. And I mean, it's hard for people to really recognize that truth of certain things, especially things that they desire and love, you know, and they're addicted to, you know. I mean, you see money has this effect on people as like this greed, you know, anything that it's really touching most of the time just ends up dissolving and destroying it in some horrible way. I think it's hard for people to change away. I mean, since this everything is devised on money as system, you know, people, it's hard for people to turn away from that. Like, I will, you know, I need, you know, people need money, of course, but it's just like desire, you know, that drive. It's something that's like really embedded in people. So it's hard for people to really change their ways. And I mean, there's a lot of truth with you're able to get a lot of truth now about what the industry and what it's doing and, you know, about that hamburger or whatever. But it's hard because there's people that don't want to, they don't want to hear it, you know, and they don't want to put it out there because it's too much, you know, it's like too much for people to want to hear. And they're like, no, I don't, let me just live in this, you know, like, let me have a little bit of, you know, a love of this, you know. But I mean, I honestly believe that people can change. I just, I think it's important for people to just have a choice and to have these different options and to be knowledgeable about really what's going on. So that's all.
Well, even my friends, a lot of them were vegetarian. Like before, when I left high school and I went to university, I met all these super cool people who were vegetarian, and that really played with my head. I'm like, really? You guys just eat broccoli and this soy cake, and that's, you're happy with that? Like, you know what I mean? And then it made me more comfortable with, you know, eating just vegetables. Right. And up till then, I was just like, so what is it? Is it going to be Sbarro or Burger King today?
Right,
so
that was me too. Like I said, you can be taught, your body can be manipulated into eating whatever, you know, and desire certain things. It can be healthy, it can be shitty, you know, your body can be, it can do these things, you know, it can live in the worst circumstances and the best, you know, it's up to you, you know, so, you know, it's believable, you know, people can, you know, not have the desires anymore, and desire other things. You know, I desire like really good juice all the time. Like if I have like really shitty juice, for example, if I come to the States and it's like concentrated like crap, I can't drink that anymore. It just doesn't taste the same.
Oh.
I mean, like all that changed my whole perception of like fruits and everything, like shitty fruits. I'm like, oh God, like, I don't know, I became like a fruit snob, I guess. I mean, being in Brazil, you know, it tastes different because it's definitely fresher there and people don't drink crappy juice. I mean, when it's like you go to any place, a corner place, it's like, what are you having? I'll have a juice. And they're like, you know, in the back, you know, squeezing it out. You know, I'll have a watermelon juice. It's like, all right, you know, like a full watermelon. You're getting the seeds in there and everything. And it's like fresh. And then to come and drink like something that's like filled with like artificial sugar in a box.
You're not talking about Jamba Juice, are you?
No. But I mean, it just...
You wouldn't drink that.
I have, but it just doesn't taste good to me. You know, I don't really like it so much.
So what do? You just drink water when you're
on
the road?
I drink water, and then, I mean, I'm on the road for a certain amount of time, so we do have fruits. I'm not saying that I don't eat them. I'm just saying just taste extremely different. Sometimes it's just unbearable. I'm like, ah, this is crap, you know.
I brought up my Youth of Today shirt.
Yes.
Because we went on tour with Sammy.
Yes,
Secret, with International Noise Conspiracy, and now I cannot remember his band, but I'll put it in the intro. But he was drumming for this other band.
Gorilla Biscuits?
No, it wasn't those two huge bands. It was like a smaller band, and I didn't know it was Sammy until like a week into the tour.
Oh, wow. No way.
Yeah, okay. And I'm like, and someone, I think one of the Noise Conspiracy guys told me, like, he used to be in Youth of Today. I'm like, what?
Ever. I mean, he lost his virginity at my parents' house. I'll just put it that way. That's I said it, Sam.
Well, it was like he was drumming for this band, and you know, they were like I don't know what you'd call it, like a an alternative band,
yeah.
Right? They weren't they weren't a punk rock hardcore band. But of course, the Noise Conspiracy guys probably brought them out because of Sammy's history.
Mm-hmm.
And their connection with Sammy that way. And so I think it was like Dennis was just like one day, he's like, you know, Sammy was in Youth of Today. And this is a week into the tour. You tell me this now? I've just been giving the guy like, yeah, hey, what's up? Hey, morning. Hey, right. How you doing? And then when he told me that, I'm like, dude, sit down.
Oh, yeah.
And then you were in a band with him. I didn't know that.
Or I was. Right before... Yeah, when I moved to New York, like we had a band together, and it was great. I mean, like I said, that everyone, you know, we're all musicians, so it's like, ah, you're gonna play drums in my band, and but it's great. You know, it was like a lot of fun, man. He's a great drummer. He's played in so many different styles of different bands with so many different styles of music, and he's still, you know, killing it.
Yeah, like I was just like, you're like, hey, dude, you know, I hate to turn it on when I find out you're like somebody, and now I'm like paying attention to you. But I mean, you know, I was like, I said all that, right. And then I'm like, look, I didn't mean to, like, you know, I don't know you,
right.
You know, and you're just this guy named Sam.
Right.
But now I find out that you played on a record that had a real big part of my teenage years. But I couldn't recognize him, right. Because on the back of We're Not In This Alone, he looks like he's 11 years old.
He's about that age.
But he was real cool. And I think he's like, you know, all the other guys in the band were kind of like, oh, now you're turning it on, guy. Now you want to talk to us. I'm like, hey, I hate to be one of those dudes, but, you know, like, you know.
It's incredible because, I mean, all those guys are so cool, you know, like, hanging out with them, like, they came to the Sao Paulo, actually. It was like Gorilla Biscuits, Judge, and Civ, and they all came and played like the same, like in 2 days, and it was great just hanging out with everyone again. And I mean, it was almost like a lot of things just hadn't really changed, and just the attitude of everyone was just so really, so very positive, you know. People very, very cool.
Yeah, like, I think that's the underlying thing when you have a background in punk rock, mm-hmm. is that it does ground you in a way.
Absolutely.
Because of all the sort of inter-scene policing that everyone does on each other,
mm-hmm.
you can't get away with shitty behavior.
Right.
Although there are some really nut jobs in the scene,
right.
as we all probably have experienced. But it does, like, a lot of the times when, you know, you meet somebody who's not really doing punk rock, mm-hmm. directly anymore. They've kind of grown up. They've sprouted wings. The one thing I really recognize is that, oh, you've got a history in punk rock. Oh, that's why you're like a little cooler, like a little more grounded and, mm-hmm. cooler than, you know, some of your peers. And, mm-hmm. and when I found out that you had this kind of background at the end of the tour we had done,
right.
I was like, oh, okay, so that's why, mm-hmm. like maybe Derek's, mm-hmm. you know coming into this post and being in this huge band, you're not like some other bands in the scene where they're all cool, everyone's, right. cool, but there's an aloofness about them,
right.
you know.
I mean, it's interesting that you say that, because there are people I met, I'm like, wow, I thought the same thing. Like, I find out, like, oh, they were going to shows. I think at that time, like, going to shows and being in the scene, and for me, really wanting to be a musician for a reason other than money and, like, girls and drugs. You know, I wanted to do music because I really, truly enjoyed it. And that was just something about the scene. It was, there was no, you know, super fame or success, you know, coming from. It was like something I just loved to do with my friends and to meet other people that enjoyed that scene. And that's what made it, I think, very pure and people very grounded, you know. It's like there were no selfies or autographs or anything like that. It was like I didn't even want any of that. You know, I wanted to just play, you know, on stage in front of people and just see that reaction, you know, at that communication. And yeah, that was it. You know, I was content with that. You know, what it was never thinking like we're gonna be huge, and it didn't, none of that stuff really mattered. But you know, a consequence of just staying, you know, wanting, you know, continuing doing music, you know, it's come to a bigger level, you know.
And how are you, you know, bridging that gap from, you know, the younger you in the hardcore scene to now being, you know, in a really, really big known star band,
mm-hmm.
is there some sort of bridge that you had to cross inside you? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
in you to go, yeah, I'm okay with signing this guy's.
Yeah, I mean, that was a little weird.
Playing a sponsored event, but that's, you know, it's cool.
I mean, that was a little bit weird for me at first, especially on top of that, like moving to a different country, you know, different language, different culture. Not really understanding what was going on a lot of the times, but just trying to figure it out as an adult, you know. So it was just really bizarre for a couple of years, like living in Sao Paulo, right. in Brazil. But I kind of figured it out once I started to meet people who weren't necessarily into metal music or anything or that scene. People were just naturally liked me for who I was, didn't know anything about my background. They were just really having that connection and then having that grounding. And then I started to have a better feeling of signing stuff and being out, because there it's very recognizable, you know, everyone in the band, and they really know it. So it's a different thing to walk out and have people honking their horns and want to take photos in the supermarket or in the bank, or it doesn't matter what age or whatever, signing stuff. Especially when you're with friends and family, and you want to spend that time, and then somebody just kind of breaks in. I just developed, you know, this patience there from being in Brazil. People are really, really sweet, very kind. And I just, being there after so many years, I just kind of like brought myself down to like, hey, just, you know, these people really enjoy what you do. They respect you. I just need to take a step back and just take a breather and just kind of remember when I was at that young age. And I just remember freaking out, like being at shows, like, oh my God, you know, and just kind of keep that in place, you know, like, hey, you know, they're a real fan of music. You know, it's incredible to always see that. You know, I love that. You know, it's really something that I still feel I'm a fan as well. You know, I never want to lose that.
No, that's cool. Yeah, I always want to know when people have that background. And
Damien Abraham from Fucked Up, the singer of Fucked Up, he has a podcast, and he talks to people who are not necessarily in the punk rock scene anymore, but have a punk rock background, and just goes through that as well. So Damien should talk to you, man.
Yeah, I've never met him. I don't believe.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys will definitely get along. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting podcast, especially when you get someone who you never even knew had a punk rock background, and then they're just talking about all this stuff.
I think it's pretty cool. Yeah. Definitely.
Now, getting back to now, days, I'm a huge fan of the DVD ASA podcast. I don't know if you're aware of that. No. David Cho's podcast.
Yes, David.
Yeah, and so I've listened to every episode. I've bought the merch from the podcast. Wow. Yeah. I'm a huge fan. And then when they started talking about you on one of the episodes, my ears pricked up. I'm like, should I email Dirk now? And I'm like a huge DVD ASA fan. So you're in Maximum Headroom, that has, is it a connection with Heather Leather or Money Mark?
What's Money Mark actually? Yeah. Okay, wow. Money Mark is really good friends with Sam Spiegel, and that's who I do Maximum Headroom with.
Okay.
And Sam Spiegel brought in Money Mark because they're friends, and as far as just coming by the house, like, hey, and Money Mark will just start hitting instruments and just contribute. Yeah. He's just like a very active person. Right. It's just like insane, and I love that energy. And that's how Sam kind of works, just like friends stop over and it's like, oh, I'm working this track. Oh, you'd be cool if you hear something, you want to do something. It's like, yeah, oh, wait, I got an idea, and start hammering away or whatever idea. And so that's how he knows Money Mark, and he's worked with Money Mark on NASA, which is what Sam has this other group called, NASA, North America, South America.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And so he's worked with a million different artists. With that, it took like maybe 5 years to do the actual album. It's just collaborating, putting certain people together. Like, for example, he had something with David Byrne, Talking Heads, with Chuck D. And he's like, I think you guys would be great, you know, this song, and wrote a song. And Shepard Fairey did like the illustration for the video. Wow. Incredible matching, like,
heavy people.
Yeah, like really, like it was like Tom Waits with was it with Cool Keith from it was yeah awesome. It was like really 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 awesome, like and so with Maximum Headroom we didn't have as many collaborations, but we did. So Money Mark contributed some parts of it. George Clinton from Parliament Funk, he sang on one song that we did together. I did the chorus, he did he did the chorus, I did the verse.
Oh my God, and, how heavy is that?
Yeah, it's
you were all in the same studio together?
No, actually, I recorded my part in Brazil, and George did his in LA at Sam's studio. And then we had Harold Faltermeyer, who's like the master of soundtracks from the
80s. Yeah,
yeah. And he wrote Axel F.
Yeah. Yes.
And so he wrote a lot of the songs also together with us, composing the songs.
Oh,
so,
my God,
yeah.
He's heavy, man.
That's he wrote like Midnight Express. Boom, 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 boom. Like he wrote, you know, the Top Gun soundtrack he worked on, and you know, Fletch, and all these like crazy 80s movies. And it was great working with him and having, I mean, we had like crazy ideas, because with Maximum Headroom, there was no limits as far as ideas. It was just, there was no fan base, or you weren't trying to appease, like, you're like, okay, let's just write what comes out. And so with Harold, we're like, hey, we need like an orchestra. And he's like, I think we can get like the Czech Philharmonic Orchestra to do stuff, because they worked in different films of mine. And so we're there in Prague, you know, and you know, like, you know, we have all this like document and everything. But anyway, yeah, Maximum Headroom, we're on tour with Yeah Yeah Yeahs and opening for them.
Okay.
And because Sam, he's also worked with Karen O and really good friends with Nick, the guitarist. And how we met David was at the border of Canada and the U.S. And they had David Choi.
David Choi. Yeah.
And so that's how we met each other. at the border going into Canada. They weren't going to let him in.
Oh, right, of course
They were
not.
Stopping everyone in our crew and band. And I was like, God. And I was the only one. They were like, all right, Mr. Green, it's like a lot of your friends are hooligans, man. Like, who are these people you're hanging out with? Eventually, they let everybody in, even David.
David hates Canada.
I know. And he was saying it there while we were there. I was like, and it was funny because I just added him on Instagram. I was like, huh. And then we got there and I was like, are you kidding me? Like,
wow.
Because he's an incredible artist. And I asked him, and we gave him a ride. He was filming like hitchhiking across
the Vice show he had. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
So he came to our show. They were like, I think it was Canadian Day that we actually played, and they were like the international, like Canadian hug ambassadors at our show, like in the audience hugging people, and since then we became friends, you know.
Yeah, well, he did the artwork for Asa Akira's book, the cover.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, it's called, I can't remember what it's called, but she wrote a book, which is Asa Akira from adult movies.
Yes, yeah, he's really good.
Yes, they do the podcast.
Yeah, so yes.
David and Asa. She wrote a book while they were doing the DVD, while they were doing the podcast, and he did the artwork for it.
Wow.
The episode I heard where your name came up, Asa,
I think she said something like, give Derek my number or something.
Right, yeah. Because my friend Sam was like, we should do some crazy stuff.
Yeah, like Asa was just like, yeah, like, hey, you know, Derek. And I'm like, whoa, Derek! She's sitting on Derek's podcast. This is amazing. Derek is the man.
I was like, holy shit!
God.
Derek is the fucking man. That's so cute. Yeah. I remember that episode. There's like, I mean, 300 episodes. I can't remember all of them, but I remember that one.
That's hilarious, man.
But yeah, so
he's a trip. He was just in Brazil,
just in case
and I missed
him. Did
you
hear that episode?
I didn't, but I know my friend Sam was like pushing it, like, yeah, we need some drama going on. Like, and I was like, it's like, oh man,
oh my god, she's awesome. I love that. So like, she's a perfect fit for the podcast, and she's really likable on the mic. And I, you know, I didn't know that she was bubbling with this amazing personality.
Right.
That really was
and you've met him before, right?
I've never met David Cho, but you know, I totally want to. But I know like a lot of the people he knows because of Vice.
Yeah. Okay.
And Vice is Canadian.
Yeah.
Which is why I don't understand why he hates Canadians so much, because he works with a lot of them.
I think it just has to do with his youth. I don't know. That's where stuff happened there, I guess. Where he was, I don't know, doing some graffiti. I don't know. He invited us to be on there, and I was
man. God. If that was me, I would have fucking... Guys, we got to cancel this show.
Right,
I
right.
Podcast.
I know. I was really bummed out, you know, but we were so busy at that time. I mean,
Yeah.
No,
they don't do it anymore.
No.
I was on Instagram, like, uploading pictures, tagging all of them, going, what's going on?
Right.
Why isn't the show still on?
Mm-hmm.
Like, but no response.
All right.
But anyway.
I mean, we could talk about Sepultura, but you do that enough in all the interviews.
whatever you...
And you know that I'm a huge fan. Mm-hmm. Whatever, you know? Whatever about your band.
Yeah, I mean...
Okay, I will ask you, what can we expect from the show tonight? Which is my favorite question.
I don't know, man. I'm using in-ears now, and it's a whole different world for me now.
That question drives me up the wall. Yeah. What can we expect from the show?
What do you expect?
What the fuck?
I wanted to start the podcast with that question with you.
Can you? The door's right there.
This is really wrong. But this is awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
This is awesome. It took a while to get this.
No, but thanks for having me, man. Thanks for being persistent.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, when I wanted you on.
But I wanted to be on it, too, so it was mutual.
But it's great. Great to have you on.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks again.
Thanks, Derek.
Oh, perfect time.
Yeah. I bend it over with the rear. The pain runs amongst the lost. It's the fiction of life. What you are is what you live. It never made a fucking difference to you. In the eyes you can see the truth. It's the fiction of life.